GoDaddy.com. Use the code BLU139 to get 10% off any combination of purchases at GoDaddy.com. See site for details. Get your piece of the internet at GoDaddy.com. Tango Tango Papa 1372, July 9, 2010.
Have we seen the actual reality of a monstrous crime? Or merely an illusion, the product of a tortured brain?
Okay, we're going to start out with a little bit of culture. That is from, the opera, and I'm going to butcher the name of it, La Traviata, and it's by Giuseppe Verdi. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Tom Wiles here with you, coming to you this evening from Ontario, California. Had to think there for a second. Last night, I unloaded the load that I brought from Arkansas when I came back to work. Unloaded that at City of Industry, and then right afterwards, I went over to a drop yard in Fontana and picked up another load that had been dropped there, and it went back right back to the same place there at City of Industry. Excuse me. And so then afterwards, I was able to park nearby on a kind of a dead-end street. It's sort of an industrial park type place. So I woke up this afternoon, and they sent a load offer that, because I told them that I was going to be sleeping a good chunk of the day. So they sent a load that picks up Friday morning at, where does it pick up at? It's right on the tip of my tongue. Santa Fe Springs, California, which is not too far from here, Santa Fe Springs. And then that load delivers to Lebanon, Tennessee, which is just east of Nashville, off of I-40. So after I woke up and kind of got myself around, then I came over here to the TA truck stop. One of I usually always come to the Ontario West TA truck stops. There's two TA truck stops here. This West one used to be back in the day it was a Union 76 truck stop until TA bought Union 76 out, and as far as their truck stops go. And then it became a TA, and there's more than enough business to keep both truck stops open, because they're, even though they're kind of across the street from each other, Millican Avenue, they're independently ran, and even though they're kind of similar, but they're independently ran as far as I know, and it's probably owned, I'm sure it's owned by the same, the same people are kind of running it probably, although they may have different managers and what have you. But I usually always come to the one on the west side because, I don't know, I just like it better. Seems like it's maybe easier to get in and out of. I don't know. So, but I, years ago I would always go to the one, I'd go to that east one. So I kind of changed over the years. Anyway, these have been here for years, so, and they're really, there aren't that many truck stops, big truck stops like this in the whole L.A. area, so most drivers kind of end up coming to these, these two truck stops, unless you just want to park on a side street somewhere in an industrial park type area. Because there's plenty of that. You can always park in a place like that. A lot of people will avoid coming to these because they do charge for parking. But since I got fuel, so when I leave in the morning, just show them my fuel ticket, and the fuel covers the cost of, other, they won't charge for parking if you buy, I think, more than 50 gallons worth of fuel. So, anyway... Let's see what I have here. I've got this piece of audio that Irk sent me, and I want to play that. And so let's just, and after that we'll kind of play it by ear. So let's go ahead and just jump right on into Irk's comment, and this is about 18 minutes and 45 seconds. So here's Irk.
G'day Tom, it's Irky from Channel Irk. ChannelIrk.com, down here, down under in Australia, very, very early on a Wednesday morning. And I thought that I'd reply back to you using a voice file that you can use on your show, because now, as you probably know, I'm doing my feedback shows for IrkPod at the end of each month. Now, I'm coming to you from my train this morning, very, very early, heading out to the South Line, for my first journey of the day, and I thought I'd leave the window open so you can enjoy a bit of the ambient noise on the way. Got a couple of things to mention to you, but I'll answer your question first, where you were asking, am I standing up while I'm driving my train? You had a mental image of me standing up at the controls driving my train. And Tom, I'm actually sitting down. I do have the capability to stand up, but I'm sitting down. Just picture that I'm sitting in a normal seated position, and I have my left hand outstretched, I'm currently using the brake lever to, on my left hand, and to the right of me is the power handle, which obviously applies power in layman's terms. Now, I've got a pretty comfortable seat. It does move around a bit, and this particular type of seat is not fixed to the train. They do have other seats that are fixed to the train, and they'd be pretty much like the air ride seats that I'd imagine would be in your truck. When I'm sitting down, I've got a perfect view of my gauges in front of me, my speedometer, my amp meter, which tells me when I'm powering, and also my various brake gauges. Now, I don't drive as much as you do in a particular day. If it's a really bad day of actual driving, I could be in the seat for 6 hours a day out of a 8.5 hour shift. And so I rather do like the fact that, yes, I do have a seat that I can sit down. Many of the earlier trains in the UK, in the London Underground, for instance, they didn't have seats. And even if they do have seats now, they're the little fold-down seats that you can get that aren't very comfortable. And so many of those guys, in fact, do stand up. I can stand up on my trains, and I'll do that actually when I take off from this station. Standing up is actually one of the ways that they tell us that we can help with fatigue. If we're feeling a bit tired and we're in between stations, some people say that standing up actually helps them to concentrate. When you stand up, you definitely have a different perception of the speed, apart from the fact that it's harder to see the speedometer when you're standing up compared to when you're sitting down. Now, at the moment, I am sitting down and I can see out my front window, but I can't see the very front of the train. Just imagine that you were driving a flat-nosed truck rather than a hooded truck, and you'll get what I mean there. And it's pretty much the same as if you're driving a bus. It's pretty flat, but I can't see the absolute front of it. Sometimes when I'm in the maintenance centre, I might be attaching my train to another train. Well, then I need to see the staff around me. I need to see the actual front of my train. And then I will stand up. So what I'll do now, I'll stand up, and I'll move the phone's in front of me on the dash. And that has changed my view. Now in a standing position, this is probably the position that you pictured me in. And it's not that bad. My body sort of fits it pretty well, because with my arms outstretched, I can still use the controls. I've got pretty long arms. And then again, I am pretty tall. I'm about 5'9", 5'10". But from where I'm standing at the moment, I've got a great view out the window, sure, but I really have to concentrate to look down if I have to look at my speedometer, for instance. You know, there are probably some guys who are standing in this position and probably can't see the actual speedo because of their stomachs. I can, but it's harder to see. You've probably, when you're in this position where you've got your nose foot or so away from the glass, your speed perception is a lot different, and you probably think that you're going faster than what you actually are. And so I'm standing up at the moment. Some blokes are a bit superstitious when they get onto a train, or if they've been driving for a while and they just want to stretch their legs, I'll sit back down. They will stand up. There's a driver friend of mine who, for some reason, when he's driving through a tunnel, or he's driving in the underground sections underneath the city of Sydney here, he'll stand up. But then again, my theory could be that he could be just wanting people to see him as he's driving his train, who knows. But it's definitely a very interesting question, and I thank you for that question, of course. And yes, I'm rather grateful that I can sit down. Just on the subject of what we have here in the train, I'm not sure what the situation is like in America with the new freight engines, but on our new freight engines here in Australia, they've got a lot of creature comforts that the old guys driving steam trains could only dream of. Of course, on our freight engines, we usually have two people. We have the driver, or what the Americans would call an engineer. And then you have another person. Sometimes they're called an assistant driver. Sometimes they're called a second person. Or they could also be called a fireman. And it's basically their job to assist the driver with the running of the train. It might be his job to call out the signals, to look out for the signals for the driver. Or sometimes they're both equally current as drivers and they'll swap throughout the journey, especially on the long distance freight and long distance passenger jobs. But on our freight engines, they've got really comfortable seats. They've got CD players with radios in them. They also have I believe it's a full-size toilet, and they also have a microwave, and some of them also have a hot plate as well, so they can bring their food. Some of them even have fridges. They can put their stuff in the fridge on the engine, and then they can cook their food, and it's all good. Whereas I don't have a fridge on this train, so I can't necessarily prepare any food while I'm driving. I just prefer to buy my food wherever it is that I have my meal break, because I'm not always at the one station at the start of the shift compared to when my meal break is. So I prefer to buy something at the shop that I know it's hot and I know it's fresh and I know that it hasn't been sitting in my bag for 4 hours. Also, in relation to a previous episode, it was probably about 30 podcasts or so, knowing you, because, you know, you're putting out episodes every couple of days. You were talking about a lot of different town names or suburb names that have the name Black in them. And we have a classic problem here in Australia. It may be a problem, it may not, just depending on your point of view. Of course, many people recognise that the Australian Aboriginal people were the original occupiers of Australia before the white man came in 1778 and took over. And so what you're finding now is that there's an increased recognition of the traditional Australian Aboriginals' role in early settlement and things like that. And so to correct some of the past, they're naming new suburbs, new towns, using an Aboriginal name. Or then again, you've also got the example where they have an Anglo name, so to speak, and an Aboriginal name, and sometimes they'll use both. And sometimes they'll actually change the name of it back to the Aboriginal name. Ayers Rock, which is the bright orange rock that everyone knows about in the centre of Australia, that for years was known as Ayers Rock. It's now again known by its Aboriginal name of Uluru. That's one classic example. There are many others around the place, and lots of new suburbs cropping up with some Aboriginal names as well. But there's one town here in Western Sydney, which is about probably 20 minutes on the train from where I am now and about 20 minutes from my house. And it's called Blacktown. It's one of our older towns here in Sydney. And I didn't know why Blacktown was called Blacktown. And I looked it up on Wikipedia, because of course that's what you do. And there was an old Aboriginal settlement in the general area that is now Blacktown. And the road leading to that Aboriginal settlement was called Blacktown Road. And so that was the name of the road. The railways actually shortened that to Blacktown, and they called the railway station in that area Blacktown, and then the suburb of Blacktown grew up around it. So some people might say that that's a derogatory way that the suburb was named. Many of our suburbs here in Sydney are named after suburbs and towns in the UK, or some of them were named after a prominent person in the early settlement. And so you've got a lot of different names that mean different things. But Blacktown is basically named after the Aboriginal people. Now, one interesting thing about Blacktown is that, of course, being in Western Sydney, it is a multicultural area, and it's also an area where there's a lot of different people from different cultures, and the Sudanese are a race that is developing out there. There's a lot of Sudanese people now in Blacktown, and apparently there's various interest groups out there, and there's a growing groundswell that they want to change the name of Blacktown and change it to an Aboriginal word or change it to something else entirely, because they don't want the black association to it. And for me, I think that's totally wrong. You know, there's plenty of new suburbs that if they want to call it after an Aboriginal or whoever, they can do it. The local Aborigines don't seem to be too offended, and they've been out there a lot longer than the Sudanese people. Conversely, sometimes I also call Blacktown Cracktown, because it's just got that reputation. And so what some people want to do, they want to change the name of Blacktown to something totally different altogether. When they change the name of suburbs, there's a lot of things that have to be done in relation to consultation and that sort of thing, because there's a lot of people who have vested interest in the name of their suburb. Of course, the people living there and all the businesses would have to change their address. In the case of businesses, it would be things like stationery. In the terms of public transport, like I'm in, you'd have to change all the maps and change all the timetables and change all the signs, and that's a lot of coin when it comes down to it, and not something that should be necessarily done lightly. And so I hope that they don't start changing the name of all these towns that start with black, or, for that matter, start with white, or, you know, whatever the case may be. The name of the town is the name of the town, and that's probably the way that it should be. Anywho, mate, I'll leave it there. I will talk to you soon. Great to hear that you're on the way to California. It's been a while since you were over there last, and so it must be a bit of a change for you getting off the East Coast and down south. Until next time, I'm Eric. Thanks, Tom, for your podcast. They're great, and also thank you for the feedback and the contribution that you make for my show as well. I know there's a lot of people out there who do podcasts and they come up with all these excuses about why they can't do a show on a regular basis. And here you are, a man out on the road, and you manage to do it. And so I look up to you in that respect, and more people should. And they think, well, if Trucker Tom can do, you know, maybe 4 podcasts a week from wherever he is in the United States, well, maybe more people should put effort into doing, you know, a show a week or whatever from the comfort and safety of their own homes. Anyway, mate, talk to you soon.
Non piondrai farfallone amoroso, notte e giorno d'intorno girando, delle belle bambine a riposo, narcisendo ad un cino d'amor. Delle belle bambine a riposo, narcisendo ad un cino d'amor. Non più avrai questi bei pennacchini, quel cappello leggero e gallante, quella chioma, quell'aria brillante, quel vermiglio donnesco color, quel vermiglio donnesco color. Non più avrai quei pennacchini, quel cappello, quella chioma, quell'aria brillante. Non piondrai farfallone amoroso, notte e giorno d'intorno girando, delle belle vanno in riposo, narcisetto ad uncino d'amor. Delle belle vanno in riposo, narcisetto ad uncino d'amor. Tra guerrieri può far manco, abbustati stretto sacco, scoppo in spalla, sciaba al fianco, colla dritto, uso franco, un gran casco, un gran turbante, molto gnor, poco contante, poco contante, poco contante. Ed in vecchio del fandango, una marcia per il fango, per montani, per valloni, con del nevi e i soglioni, al concerto di tromboni, di bombardi, di cannoni, dei bimpali, tutti i tuoni, all'orecchio fan fischiar. Non più avrai quei pennacchini, non più avrai quel cappello, non più avrai quella chioma, non più avrai quell'aria brillante. Non più andrai farfallone amoroso, notte e giorno d'intorno girando, delle belle turbando in riposo, narcisetto ad uncino d'amor. Delle belle turbando in riposo, narcisetto ad uncino d'amor. Cherubino alla vittoria, alla gloria militar, cherubino alla vittoria, alla gloria militar, alla gloria militar, alla gloria militar.
Okay, so that was more culture. That was from The Marriage of Figaro by Mozart. Anyway, thank you, Eric, for the audio comment. You know, it's interesting how, I don't know, people want to change the names of things sometimes. they'll get together and then want to change the name, especially, I don't know, there have been towns in the U.S. that have changed names for whatever reason, and then there have been, most often, I think, street names sometimes will get changed. You know, there's been a bunch of streets in cities across the country. They've renamed them, like Martin Luther King Boulevard or whatever. And that's happened in a lot of places. Now, it's interesting, in Atlanta, on the west side of Atlanta, there's that Petro truck stop. And I don't even remember what the name of the street used to be. It was that, whatever it was. It was where you got off at that exit off of 285 there on the west side of Atlanta. It was whatever it was for years and years. And then, I don't know, in recent years, they changed the name of it to Hallowell Parkway. And I don't know why they did that, other than I think they were just trying to kind of paste on a new name because it's like, that you get inside of Interstate 285 and you don't have to go very far at all, not even a mile, and it really deteriorates into a bad avenue, a bad neighborhood. I don't know. I kind of get the impression that they just changed that name because the other name became associated with a bad neighborhood. So they simply changed the name and, it didn't change the neighborhood at all, but they changed the name of it. Hallowell Parkway, it sounds good. It sounds better than whatever it was before that had the bad association. So, I don't know, it's kind of strange. Now, you were talking about, they're kind of renaming things with indigenous names, for the Aborigines. Well, now, here in the U.S., there's been controversies because, like some of the baseball, or I don't even know, some of the, we'll just say sports teams, some of them call themselves the Red, Washington Redskins. Why is it doing that? Let me just unplug that. Well, it stopped. Maybe if I dim the screen on the computer, that'll prevent that from happening again. Anyway, you had the Washington Redskins, and there were actually people, bad because you're discriminating against Indians. It's racist, racist names. And so there's been a few cases where people want to change the name of sports teams because they're, they say, oh, that's racist, So, And then what's even more absurd, the word Indian is really a misnomer because, I may have my history wrong, but whenever Columbus came to the, ended up in this country, in North America, he thought he was in India. And so then they just called the native people that were already here, they called them Indians. And they're not Indian, they're not from India, but they got, that name got kind of stuck on them, So, I don't know. What is really sad, there are people, you have indigenous people and what have you, and that's all fine and dandy, but what's sad, especially in our modern world, why do we have to, kind of go back to whatever tribes we are? Why do we have to do that? Why can't we just be people and get along? Why can't we just be people and find, whatever it is that we have in common and move forward? Why do some people want to cling to the past? Why do some people want to cling to their resentment? Well, I just said it. They want to, why do people do that? Because it, they get a sense of identity out of it, sort of an externalized identity, a sort of a groupthink identity. I've talked about, this quite a bit in the past. sort of get a groupthink type of identity going, and of course then they end up, people end up fighting with each other, and it's really sad. It's really a sad thing. You know, because there's really, what do you get out of hating people from another quote unquote tribe? What do you get from, you know, out of hating somebody just because they look different than you do, or they sound different? You know, because a lot of it, you know, it's not really so much looks, although we think, oh, it's based on looks. People hate each other, or they're suspicious of each other because of the way they look. That's not really it. It's really more about language. It really is more about language than anything else. And, you know, you think, well, you know, and I'll use the example of black people in the United States. You know, there's this sort of a black way of speaking English. It's sort of a, you know, I've heard there's been some people that have called it a Negro dialect. And usually, if you just listen to, you know, just listen to the radio, or listen, just listen where someone's, you know, like somebody's calling into some kind of a TV program or a radio program, you hear a voice. Chances are, if it's an African American male or female, usually you can tell immediately because of there's a just certain accent, the way they pronounce words. And sometimes you can't tell if they've really, you know, if they've practiced kind of, you know, or maybe they were raised in an, you know, where you couldn't, you know, they got rid of the accent, or maybe they weren't, their parents didn't have that accent. It's pretty rare, but sometimes you can't tell. But most of the time you can, and so that culture, you know, that accent, the way they pronounce different words and the different slang terms that end up getting used, ends up forming an identity, and that identity is based really around resentment, and the two things really kind of do get associated together. And when one of them, you know, what's really telling is when one of them doesn't sound that way. You know, you take like Clarence Thomas, for example, really doesn't sound black, quote unquote, you know, the Supreme Court justice, and there's other examples of that. They end up being castigated, and, you know, oh, you're white, you know, an Oreo, you're black on the outside, white on the inside, you know, like Oreo cookie type thing. And, you know, and it's based around language. You know, look at what's happened in Canada. You know, Quebec has, you know, for years and years, there's been people in Quebec that have been agitating. Ah, we need to make, you know, separate from Canada and make Quebec its own country. And of course, it's always been, you know, detrimental to Quebec, basically, because at one point, I think it was, I don't know, I'd have to look, but at one point, maybe back in the 70s, they were really kind of getting, people were all getting riled up about it, and they were really thinking that they were going to secede from Canada. And it got to the point where a lot of companies were just moving out of Quebec because they were, you know, they didn't know what was going to happen. And it was to Quebec's detriment. You know, and then the Quebec passed all these laws about signs. You know, the signs have to be in French. I think the French words have to, if you've got a billboard or whatever, the French spelling has to be bigger than the English spelling if it's got English underneath it. It's absurd, you know, and so there's been all of this animosity that has gone on in Canada, and it's based around language. It really is based around language. And, you know, it's really, if you look at it objectively, it's really absurd. It's absolutely absurd. So, you know, but people kind of end up with their different identities, and it's silly when you really think about it. You know, most of that is just, it's asinine, it's silly. And it's especially bad if you can, you know, if that's also associated with the particular way a person looks. Then the two, you know, then people start making, they start making judgments. Especially if you've got absurd behavior that kind of gets, and then resentment along with that, that gets kind of tied with the way people look, and then, you know, with the groupthink that those people tend to have. Then all you have to do is just, because of the way people become conditioned, you just look at an image of someone, and all of a sudden it calls up all the things that are associated to it, you know. So you see, you know, different people, you get these different associations just by default, just because of the way somebody looks, you know, because, you know, and that's tied in with resentment, because if, you know, I've talked about this and I've given this example a million times. Let's say a woman is raped in the back of a red 57 Chevrolet, you know, and it's raining, and the guy that rapes her has a red beard, you know, to really make it extreme. After that, you know, if she gets really upset, as women usually do when they're being raped, they get, you know, they get resentment style upset where they could kill the guy with their thoughts, hurling the metal thunderbolts. Anything after that, the color red, 57 Chevy, a guy with a beard, just a guy, a man, you know, rain, thunderstorm, weather events, you know, anything that's present when you get upset, when you resent, can trigger that all over again. And so then you can begin, if you can understand that, then you can begin to see how this groupthink thing is very dangerous, and why it causes, it really does cause all kinds of strife, it causes wars, etc., etc., etc. And you know, it's really at the root of it, the root of all of it, is people playing God in their own minds, you know, as individuals, and that leads to groupthink, you know, just various kinds of groupthink, and, you know, people warring with each other over their groupthink. So, anyhow, what I've also got this TED Talks, and this fellow's name, let me see if I can find his name here. Oh, gosh. Well, let's see. Well, I'm digging here. It's Omar Omar Ahmed. And he's called, there's Political Change with Pen and Paper. Let me unplug that. That's driving me up the wall. And this guy's, he's got an interesting point to make, because he's talking about politicians, you know, and so on and so forth. And this is about 6 minutes, 38 seconds. So here we go.
One of the things that define a TEDster is you've taken your passion and you've turned it into stewardship. You actually put action to the issues you care about. But what you're going to find eventually is you may need to actually get elected officials to help you out. So how do you do that? One of the things I should probably tell you is I worked for the Discovery Channel early in my career, and that sort of warped my framework. So when you start to think about politicians, you got to realize these are strange creatures. Other than the fact that they can't tell directions and they have very strange breeding habits, how do you actually work with these things? What we need to understand is what drives the political creature. And there are two things that are primary in a politician's heart. One is reputation and influence. These are the primary tools by which a politician can do his job. The second one, unlike most animals, which is survival of the species, this is preservation of self. Now, you may think it's money, but that's actually sort of a proxy to what I can do to preserve myself. Now, the challenge with you moving your issue forward is these animals are getting broadcast to all the time. So what doesn't work in terms of getting your issue to be important? You can send them an email. Well, unfortunately, I've got so many Viagra ads coming at me, your email is lost. It doesn't matter, it's spam. How about you get on the phone? Well, chances are I've got a droid who's picking up the phone. Yes, they called and they said they didn't like it. That doesn't move. Face-to-face would work, but it's hard to set it up. It's hard to get the context and actually get the communication to work. Yes, contributions actually do make a difference, and they set a context for having a conversation, but it takes some time to build up. So what actually works? And the answer is rather strange. It's a letter. We live in a digital world, but we're fairly analog creatures. Letters actually work. Even the top dog himself takes time every day to read 10 letters that are picked up by staff. I can tell you that every official that I've ever worked with will tell you about the letters they get and what they mean. So how are you going to write your letter? First of all, you're going to pick up an analog device, a pen. I know these are tough, and you may have a hard time getting your hand bent around it. But this is actually critical, and it is critical that you actually handwrite your letter. It is so novel to see this, that somebody actually picked up an analog device and has written to me. Second of all, I'm going to recommend that you get into a proactive stance and write to your elected officials at least once a month. Here's my promise to you. If you are consistent and do this, within 3 months, the elected official will start calling you when that issue comes up and says, "What do you think?" Now, I'm going to give you a four-paragraph format to work with. Now, when you approach these animals, you need to understand there's a dangerous end to them. And you also need to approach them with some level of respect and a little bit of wariness. So in paragraph number one, what I'm going to tell you to do is very simply this. Do you appreciate them? You may not appreciate the person, you may not appreciate anything else, but maybe you appreciate the fact that they've got a tough gig. When animals are going to make a point, they make the point. They don't spend a lot of time dicking around, so here you go. Paragraph number two, you may actually have to just get very blunt and say, what's really on your mind? When you do this, don't attack people, you attack tactics. Ad hominem attacks will get you nowhere. Paragraph number three, when animals are attacked or cornered, they will fight to the death. So you have to give them an exit. Most of the time, if they have an exit strategy, they should take it. Obviously, you're intelligent. If you had the right information, you would have done the right thing. Lastly, you want to be the nurturing agent. You're the safe place to come into. So in paragraph number four, you're going to tell people, if no one is providing you this information, let me help. Animals do displays. They do two things. They warn you, or they try to attract you and say, we need to mate. You're going to do that by the way you sign your letter. You do a number of things. You're a vice president. You volunteer. You do something else. Why is this important? Because this establishes the two primary criteria for the political creature, that you have influence in a large sphere and that my preservation depends on you. Here is one very quick hack, especially for the feds in the audience. Here's how you mail your letter. First of all, you send the original to the district office. You send the copy to the main office. If they follow protocol, they'll pick up the phone and say, hey, do you have the original? Then some droid in the back puts the name on a tickler and says, oh, this is an important letter. And you actually get into the folder that the elected official actually has to read. So what your letter means? I got to tell you, we are all in a party, and political officials are the piñatas. We are harangued, lectured to, sold, marketed, but a letter is actually one of the few times that we have honest communication. I got this letter when I was first elected, and I still carry it to every council meeting I go to. This is an opportunity at real dialogue. And if you have stewardship and want to communicate, that dialogue is incredibly powerful. So when you do that, here's what I can promise. You're going to be the 800-pound gorilla in the forest. Get writing.
Okay, so that was Omar, and I can't really pronounce his last name right, Ahmed or something like that. And he's talking about, how to influence politicians. And I think he's right. You know, people do ignore emails. You know, people in that position, if they're getting a lot of email, I could see where they would ignore it. And they would probably ignore stuff that you printed out on the computer. You know, you write your business letter on the computer and then you sign it. You know, I used to, there was a period of time where I was sending all kinds of, you know, this would probably be like in the 80s, I was sending letters to my congressman. And I'd always get these letters back, you know, and it was kind of like boilerplate type stuff, you know, where it was kind of a do-nothing thing. But I could see where, you know, what he's telling, you know, he's saying to handwrite it. So what you could do is write it on the computer, because obviously you'd, you know, I like to, you know, because either what you'd have to do is write it out, and then you'd have to go through the, you know, the old-fashioned editing process where you cross out words and insert words and what have you. And then you'd have to rewrite it, you know, because obviously you wouldn't want to send them something you'd scribbled on and marked stuff out on. So what I would probably do if I was going to handwrite a letter like that, I would do it on the computer, write the letter on the computer, get the wording all right, and then actually handwrite it out. So, you know, and then, you know, what do you say, mail the original to the district and then the copy to the, you know, to their office in Washington or wherever, you know, and then that, you know, it's kind of a little bit of a hack, he called it, and then that, you know, makes it more likely that that's going to get into the folder that the guy actually reads. So that is very interesting. Anyway, probably better be bringing this to close. See if I can get this uploaded, get to bed. Since I slept a good chunk of the afternoon, probably I'm going to have a little bit of trouble going to sleep. Now, before I go, you've probably heard of Pandora, pandora.com. And what that is, it's... You know, it's kind of like a streaming radio, except they kind of customize stuff. You can pick, you know, you sign up for Pandora, and they got a free version, and that's what I've been experimenting with so far. They have a free version. You put in your, you know, like you pick a song, you know, and there's just tons of different types of music, but you could just pick a song. And then they create a quote-unquote radio station around that based on the song that you picked. And, you know, and then, of course, if you pay whatever their fee is, then there's no ads in it. But, and they give you a few more privileges as far as being able to skip songs and so on and so forth. But it's very interesting. So I was experimenting with that a little bit tonight on the computer at first, and then there's a Pandora application that I loaded on my phone, the Android version, and so I created an account on Pandora, and then I went ahead and on the computer, you know, and then I went ahead and put my username and password into the phone. And you know, when I walked into the truck stop earlier this evening, I took my phone and I was just listening to that streaming, and it sounds, you know, it's very high sound quality, sounds pretty good. So it's kind of an interesting idea, you know, because you can create quote unquote radio stations, streaming stations, based entirely on just a single song that you're picking. And then as you're listening, you can either give a thumbs up or a thumbs down to different songs. And you can actually bookmark songs that come up. And, of course, you can also buy them. and there are ads in the, you know, on the phone version. There are ads that kind of pop up along, you know, this little banner on the bottom of the screen. And those are based on GPS. So I was getting, you know, since I'm in Ontario, California this evening, I was actually getting ads, you know, kind of popping up at the bottom of the screen that were based, you know, they were local ads, which is quite an interesting idea. you know, because I've heard people talk about, you know, advertising on cell phones. How would you advertise on a cell phone? You know, but if it's, I don't know, that's kind of interesting to put a local ad into a program like that. So that's kind of an interesting idea. And I've never, apart from, you know, people always talk about what movie was it? I think it was Minority Report, where the guy was walking along and there were ads that were just specifically for him, you know, aimed at him. But I've never really heard anybody talk about, you know, other than you'd be walking along and all of a sudden you'd get a text message on your phone, you know, if you walked by a pizza place or something, or into a neighborhood with a pizza, you know, where they'd send you a text message. That would be kind of unwanted. But I think this idea, you know, if you've got a program that you want, like this Pandora, and I've noticed other programs, you know, do have ads in them as well, but I've not noticed them being local like that. You got a program that you want, and it's the free version, you know, and I don't really care because I'm not actually, you know, it doesn't take up much room on the screen. And, you know, so you got local ads. So that's going to be interesting to kind of see what pops up as I go across the country, you know, and open that up in other, you know, when I'm not, you know, apart, you know, because I'm obviously I've started messing with it while I was here today, but it'll be interesting to see what other ads might pop up. But Pandora is interesting, you know, and there's been, you know, they're not the first people to stream. Streaming audio has been around for a long, long time now, but Pandora seems to be doing something different. And I think it really probably has to do with the fact that they're sort of creating a playlist of music based on what you put this one song in there, and then they're creating this playlist, and then as you give a thumbs up and a thumbs down, that tailors it even further. And so they're really doing something, you know, they're calling it the DNA of music. That's really what they're doing differently, and why they're gaining a lot of attention, as opposed to, you know, like Live 365 and some of those other, you know, there's been tons of these things for a long time, but Pandora is the first one that is really doing things kind of in a different way, and it does seem to be gaining some traction, and as I say, it's very interesting. You know, because that actually might entice me to, let's say, listen to music while I'm driving. Or listen to music, you know, put it on in the background. You know, if I want to listen to music at home, you know, when I'm doing something else, plug in Pandora and listen to it. You know, because, you're being exposed to new music that you probably haven't heard before. And it's going to be with these quote-unquote stations, these customized stations that they create for you, it's going to be really strictly based on similarities in that song that you put in there. So it's quite an interesting, you know, and then you're giving a thumbs up and a thumbs down. So it's a very interesting idea that they've come up with. And but sometimes the interesting ideas that these companies come up with, it seems like, well, it's just something else. You know, I'm sure when Pandora started, and I really don't know the history of it, I'm sure people were thinking, oh, we've had this before. What are they going to do that's different? You know, and then people were saying the same thing about Twitter, you know, back a few years ago. People were saying, well, what are we going to do with this? It's just, this is crazy. You know, people were going on and on. Well, obviously, Twitter fills a niche, and they're doing something that different than all the also-rans. Same way with Facebook. Facebook obviously is doing something, you know, they've had their people complaining about it, but obviously Facebook has done something right to get all of the, you know, to get the ball rolling. And then once, of course, the thing's rolling, then everyone and their dog's on Facebook. And by the way, I'm going to be writing an article about you know, because I've noticed this thing that's happened, and I've talked about it before. You know, I used to get a lot more email than I am now. And it seems like now people are using Facebook and Twitter to a large extent in place of email, which is kind of an interesting thing. And so I'm going to be writing an article about that. So, you know, in the next, I don't know, sometime in the near future to post on geeknewscentral.com. So, anyhow, probably better be cutting this off, as I say. Hope everyone is having a great week. Weekend is coming. And I will catch you later.
Remember, Trucker Tom is like Visa. He's everywhere you want to be.
Product reviews, restaurant reviews, photos, opinions, and more. Visit Trucker Tom's website at www.truckerphoto.com. You've been listening to Trucker Tom's podcast, and we'd love to hear what you have to say. All you have to do is send us an email to tom@truckerphoto.com.